Part 1. A Light. Shallan, Kaladin, Dalinar. 1. Xanthid. To be perfectly frank, what has happened these last 2 months is upon my head. The death, destruction, loss, and pain are my burden. I should have seen it coming, and I should have stopped it. From the personal journal of Navani Kolin, Yesesus 1174. Shallan pinched the thin charcoal pencil and drew a series of straight lines radiating from a sphere on the horizon. That sphere wasn't quite the sun, nor was it one of the moons. Clouds outlined in charcoal seemed to stream toward it, and the sea beneath them. A drawing could not convey the bizarre nature of that ocean, made not of water, but of small beads of translucent glass. Shallan shivered, remembering that place. Yasna knew much more of it than she would speak of to her ward, and Shallan wasn't certain how to ask. How did one demand answers after a betrayal such as Shallan's? Only a few days had passed since that event, and Shallan still didn't know exactly how her relationship with Yasna would proceed. The deck rocked as the ship tacked, enormous sails fluttering overhead. Shallan was forced to grab the railing with her clothed safe hand to steady herself. Captain Tosbeck said that so far the seas hadn't been bad for this part of Long Brow's Strait. However, she might have to go below if the waves and motion got much worse. Shallan exhaled and tried to relax as the ship settled. A chill wind blew, and windspren zipped past on invisible air currents. Every time the sea grew rough, Shallan remembered that day, that alien ocean of glass beads. She looked down again at what she'd drawn. She'd only glimpsed that place, and her sketch was not perfect. She frowned. On her paper, a pattern had risen, like an embossing. What had she done? That pattern was almost as wide as the page, a sequence of complex lines with sharp angles and repeated arrowhead shapes. Was it an effect of drawing that weird place? The place Yasna said was named Shadesmar? Shallan hesitantly moved her free hand to feel the unnatural ridges on the page. The pattern moved, sliding across the page like an axe-hound pup under a bedsheet. Shallan yelped and leapt from her seat, dropping her sketchpad to the deck. The loose pages slumped to the planks, fluttering and then scattering in the wind. Nearby sailors, Phelan men with long white eyebrows they combed back over their ears, scrambled to help, snatching sheets from the air before they could blow overboard.
"You all right, young miss?"
Tosbeck asked, looking over from a conversation with one of his mates. The short, portly Tosbeck wore a wide sash and a coat of gold and red matched by the cap on his head. He wore his eyebrows up and stiffened into a fanned shape above his eyes. "I'm well, Captain," Shallan said. "I was merely spooked." Yalb stepped up to her, proffering the pages.
"Your accoutrements, my lady."
Shallan raised an eyebrow.
"Accoutrements?"
"Sure,"
the young sailor said with a grin.
"I'm practicing my fancy words. They help a fellow obtain reasonable feminine companionship. You know, the kind of young lady who doesn't smell too bad and has at least a few teeth left."
"Lovely," Shallan said, taking the sheets back. "Well, depending on your definition of lovely, at least." She suppressed further quips, suspiciously regarding the stack of pages in her hand. The picture she'd drawn of Shadesmar was on top, no longer bearing the strange embossed ridges.
"What happened?"
Yalb said.
"Did a Kremling crawl out from under you or something?"
As usual, he wore an open-fronted vest and a pair of loose trousers. "It was nothing,"
Shallan said softly, tucking the pages away into her satchel. Yalb gave her a little salute. She had no idea why he had taken to doing that, and went back to tying rigging with the other sailors. She soon caught bursts of laughter from the men near him, and when she glanced at him, glory spren danced around his head. They took the shape of little spheres of light. He was apparently very proud of the jape he'd just made. She smiled. It was indeed fortunate that Tozbeck had been delayed in Carbranth. She liked this crew, and was happy that Yasna had selected them for their voyage. Shallan sat back down on the box that Captain Tozbeck had ordered lashed beside the railing, so she could enjoy the sea as they sailed. She had to be wary of the spray, which wasn't terribly good for her sketches, but so long as the seas weren't rough, the opportunity to watch the waters was worth the trouble. The scout atop the rigging let out a shout. Shallan squinted in the direction he pointed. They were within sight of the distant mainland, sailing parallel to it. In fact, they'd docked at port last night to shelter from the high storm that had blown past. When sailing, you always wanted to be near to port. Venturing into open seas when a high storm could surprise you was suicidal. The smear of darkness to the north was the Frostlands, a largely uninhabited area along the bottom edge of Roshar. Occasionally she caught a glimpse of higher cliffs to the south. Thalina, the great island kingdom, made another barrier there. The straits passed between the two. The lookout had spotted something in the waves just north of the ship, a bobbing shape that at first appeared to be a large log. No, it was much larger than that, and wider. Shallan stood squinting as it drew closer. It turned out to be a domed brown-green shell, about the size of three rowboats lashed together. As they passed by, the shell came up alongside the ship and somehow managed to keep pace, sticking up out of the water perhaps 6 or 8 feet. A xanthid! Shallan leaned out over the rail, looking down as the sailors jabbered excitedly, several joining her in craning out to see the creature. Xanthidin were so reclusive that some of her books claimed they were extinct, and all modern reports of them untrustworthy.
"You are good luck, young miss,"
Yalb said to her with a laugh as he passed by with rope.
"We ain't seen a xanthid in years."
"You still aren't seeing one," Shallan said. "Only the top of its shell." To her disappointment, waters hid anything else, save shadows of something in the depths that might have been long arms extending downward. Stories claimed the beasts would sometimes follow ships for days, waiting out in the sea as the vessel went into port, then following them again once the ship left.
"The shell is all you ever see of one," Yalb said. "Passions! This is a good sign."
Shallan clutched her satchel. She took a memory of the creature down there beside the ship by closing her eyes, fixing the image of it in her head so she could draw it with precision. Draw what, though? She thought. A lump in the water? An idea started to form in her head. She spoke it aloud before she could think better. "Bring me that rope," she said, turning to Yalb.
"Brightness?" he asked, stopping in place.
"Tie a loop in one end," she said, hurriedly setting her satchel on her seat. "I need to get a look at the xanthid. I've never actually put my head under water in the ocean. Will the salt make it difficult to see?"
"Underwater?"
Yalb said, voice squeaking. "You're not tying the rope."
"Because I'm not a storming fool. Captain will have my head if—"
"Get a friend," Shallan said, ignoring him and taking the rope to tie one end into a small loop. "You're going to lower me down over the side, and I'm going to get a glimpse of what's under the shell. Do you realize that nobody has ever produced a drawing of a live xanthid? All the ones that have washed up on beaches were badly decomposed, and since sailors consider hunting the things to be bad luck—"
"It is!"
Yalb said, voice growing more high-pitched.
"Ain't nobody going to kill one."
Shallan finished the loop and hurried to the side of the ship, her red hair whipping around her face as she leaned out over the rail. The Samphit was still there. How did it keep up? She could see no fins. She looked back at Yalb, who held the rope.
Ah, Brightness. Is this payback for what I said about your backside to Besnik? That was just in jest, but you got me good.
He trailed off as she met his eyes.
Storms. You're serious.
I'll not have another opportunity like this. Naladun chased these things for most of her life and never got a good look at one.
This is insanity.
No, this is scholarship. I don't know what kind of view I can get through the water, but I have to try.
Yalb sighed. We have masks, made from a tortoise shell with glass in hollowed-out holes on the front and bladders along the edges to keep the water out. You can duck your head underwater with one on and see. We use them to check over the hull at dock.
Wonderful.
Of course, I'd have to go to the captain to get permission to take one.
She folded her arms. Devious of you. We'll get to it. It was unlikely she'd be able to go through with this without the captain finding out anyway. Yalb grinned.
What happened to you in Carbranth? Your first trip with us, you were so timid, you looked like you'd faint at the mere thought of sailing away from your homeland.
Shallan hesitated, then found herself blushing. This is somewhat foolhardy, isn't it?
Hanging from a moving ship and sticking your head in the water?
Yalb said.
Yeah, kind of a little.
Do you think we could stop the ship? Yalb laughed, but went jogging off to speak with the captain, taking her query as an indication she was still determined to go through with her plan. And she was. What did happen to me? She wondered. The answer was simple. She'd lost everything. She'd stolen from Yasna Kolin, one of the most powerful women in the world, and in so doing had not only lost her chance to study as she'd always dreamed, but had also doomed her brothers and her house. She had failed utterly and miserably, and she'd pulled through it. She wasn't unscathed. Her credibility with Yasna had been severely wounded, and she felt that she had all but abandoned her family. But something about the experience of stealing Yasna's soul caster, which had turned out to be a fake anyway, then nearly being killed by a man she'd thought was in love with her. Well, she now had a better idea of how bad things could get. It was as if, once, she had feared the darkness, but now she had stepped into it. She had experienced some of the horrors that awaited her there. Terrible as they were, at least she knew.
You always knew, a voice whispered deep inside of her. You grew up with horrors, Shallan. You just won't let yourself remember them.
What is this?
Tazbek asked as he came up, his wife, Ashlov, at his side. The diminutive woman did not speak much. She dressed in a skirt and blouse of bright yellow, a headscarf covering all of her hair except the two white eyebrows, which she had curled down beside her cheeks.
Young miss, Tazbek said. You want to go swimming? Can't you wait until we get into port? I know of some nice areas where the water is not nearly so cold.
I won't be swimming, Shallan said, blushing further. What would she wear to go swimming with men about? Did people really do that? I need to get a closer look at our companion. She gestured toward the sea creature.
Young miss, you know I can't allow something so dangerous. Even if we stop the ship, what if the beast harmed you?
They're said to be harmless.
They're so rare, can we really know for certain? Besides, there are other animals in these seas that could harm you. Redwaters hunt this area for certain, and we might be in shallow enough water for Cornax to be a worry.
Tazbek shook his head.
I'm sorry. I just cannot allow it.
Shallan bit her lip and found her heart beating traitorously. She wanted to push harder, but that decisive look in his eyes made her wilt.
Very well.
Tosbeck smiled broadly. I'll take you to see some shells in the port at Amidlaten when we stop there, young miss. They have quite a collection.
She didn't know where that was,
but from the jumble of consonants squished together, she assumed it would be on the Thalen side. Most cities were this far south. Though Thalena was nearly as frigid as the Frostlands, people seemed to enjoy living there. Of course, Thalens were all a little off. How else to describe Yalb and the others wearing no shirts despite the chill in the air?
They weren't the ones contemplating a dip in the ocean, Shallan reminded herself.
She looked over the side of the ship again, watching waves break against the shell of the gentle Santhid. What was it? A great shelled beast? Like the fearsome chasm fiends of the shattered plains? Was it more like a fish under there or more like a tortoise? The Santhidin were so rare, and the occasions when scholars had seen them in person so infrequent, that the theories all contradicted one another. She sighed and opened her satchel, then set to organizing her papers, most of which were practice sketches of the sailors in various poses as they worked to maneuver the massive sails overhead, tacking against the wind. Her father would never have allowed her to spend a day sitting and watching a bunch of shirtless dark eyes. How much her life had changed in such a short time. She was working on a sketch of the Santhid's shell when Yasna stepped up onto the deck. Like Shallan, Yasna wore the hava, a Vorin dress of distinctive design. The hemline was down at her feet and the neckline almost at her chin. Some of the Thalens, when they thought she wasn't listening, referred to the clothing as prudish. Shallan disagreed. The hava wasn't prudish, but elegant. Indeed, the silk hugged the body, particularly through the bust, and the way the sailors gawked at Yasna indicated they didn't find the garment unflattering. Yasna was pretty. Lush of figure, tan of skin, immaculate eyebrows, lips painted a deep red, hair up in a fine braid. Though Yasna was twice Shallan's age, her mature beauty was something to be admired, even envied. Why did the woman have to be so perfect? Yasna ignored the eyes of the sailors. It wasn't that she didn't notice men. Yasna noticed everything and everyone. She simply didn't seem to care one way or another how men perceived her.
No, that's not true, Shallan thought as Yasna walked over.
She wouldn't take the time to do her hair or put on makeup if she didn't care how she was perceived. In that, Yasna was an enigma. On one hand, she seemed to be a scholar concerned only with her research. On the other hand, she cultivated the poise and dignity of a king's daughter, and at times used it like a bludgeon.
"And here you are," Yasna said, walking to Shallan.
A spray of water from the side of the ship chose that moment to fly up and sprinkle her. She frowned at the drops of water beading on her silk clothing, then looked back to Shallan and raised her eyebrow.
"The ship, you may have noticed, has two very fine cabins that I hired out for us at no small expense."
"Yes, but they're inside, as rooms usually are."
"I've spent most of my life inside."
"So you will spend much more of it, if you wish to be a scholar." Shallan bit her lip, waiting for the order to go below. Curiously, it did not come. Yasna gestured for Captain Tosbeck to approach, and he did so, groveling his way over with cap in hand.
"Yes, Brightness?" he asked.
"I should like another of these."
"Seats," Yasna said, regarding Shallan's box. Tosbeck quickly had one of his men lash a second box in place. As she waited for the seat to be ready, Yasna waved for Shallan to hand over her sketches. Yasna inspected the drawing of the Santhid, then looked over the side of the ship. No wonder the sailors were making such a fuss.
Luck, Brightness, one of the sailors said. It is a good omen for your trip, don't you think?
I shall take any fortune provided me, Nunhel Eltorv, she said. Thank you for the seat.
The sailor bowed awkwardly before retreating.
You think they're superstitious fools,
Shallan said softly, watching the sailor leave.
From what I have observed, Yasna said, these sailors are men who have found a purpose in life and now take simple pleasure in it.
Yasna looked at the next drawing. Many people make far less out of life. Captain Tosbeck runs a good crew. You were wise in bringing him to my attention.
Shallan smiled. You didn't answer my question.
You didn't ask a question, Yasna said. These sketches are characteristically skillful, Shallan. But weren't you supposed to be reading?
I had trouble concentrating.
So you came up on deck, Yasna said, to sketch pictures of young men working without their shirts on. You expected this to help your concentration?
Shallan blushed as Yasna stopped at one sheet of paper in the stack.
Shallan sat patiently. She'd been well trained in that by her father, until Yasna turned it toward her. The picture of Shadesmar, of course.
You have respected my command not to peer into this realm again? Yasna asked.
Yes, Brightness. That picture was drawn from a memory of my first lapse.
Yasna lowered the page. Shallan thought she saw a hint of something in the woman's expression. Was Yasna wondering if she could trust Shallan's word?
I assume this is what is bothering you?
Yasna asked.
Yes, Brightness.
I suppose I should explain it to you then.
Really? You would do that?
You didn't sound so surprised.
It seems like powerful information, Shallan said. The way you forbade me, I assumed that knowledge of this place was secret, or at least not to be trusted to one of my age.
Yasna sniffed.
I found that refusing to explain secrets to young people makes them more prone to get themselves into trouble, not less. Your experimentation proves that you've already stumbled face first into all of this, as I once did myself, I'll have you know. I know through painful experience how dangerous Shadesmar can be. If I leave you in ignorance, I'll be to blame if you get yourself killed there.
So you'd have explained about it, if I'd asked earlier in our trip?
Probably not, Yasna admitted. I had to see how willing you were to obey me, this time.
Shallan wilted, and suppressed the urge to point out that back when she'd been a studious and obedient ward, Yasna hadn't divulged nearly as many secrets as she did now.
So, what is it, that place?
It's not truly a location, Yasna said.
Not as we usually think of them.
Shadesmar is here all around us right now. All things exist there in some form, as all things exist here.
Shallan frowned.
I don't...
Yasna held up a finger to quiet her.
All things have three components. The soul, the body, and the mind. That place you saw, Shadesmar, is what we call the cognitive realm, the place of the mind. All around us you see the physical world. You can touch it, see it, hear it. This is how your physical body experiences the world. Well, Shadesmar is the way that your cognitive self, your unconscious self, experiences the world. Through your hidden senses touching that realm, you make intuitive leaps in logic and you form hopes. It is likely through those extra senses that you, Shallan, create art.
Water splashed on the bow of the ship as it crossed a swell. Shallan wiped a drop of salty water from her cheek, trying to think through what Yasna had just said.
That made almost no sense whatsoever to me, Brightness.
I should hope that it didn't, Yasna said. I've spent 6 years researching Shadesmar, and I still barely know what to make of it. I shall have to accompany you there several times before you can understand even a little the true significance of the place. Yasna grimaced at the thought. Shallan was always surprised to see visible emotion from her. Emotion was something relatable, something human, and Shallan's mental image of Yasna Kolin was of someone almost divine. It was, upon reflection, an odd way to regard a determined atheist. "Listen to me," Yasna said. "My own words betray my ignorance. I told you that Shadesmar wasn't a place, and yet I call it one in my next breath. I speak of visiting it, though it is all around us. We simply don't have the proper terminology to discuss it. Let me try another tactic." Yasna stood up, and Shallan hastened to follow. They walked along the ship's rail, feeling the deck sway beneath their feet. Sailors made way for Yasna with quick bows. They regarded her with as much reverence as they would a king. How did she do it? How could she control her surroundings without seeming to do anything at all? "Look down into the waters," Yasna said as they reached the bow. "What do you see?" Shallan stopped beside the rail and stared down at the blue waters, foaming as they were broken by the ship's prow. Here at the bow she could see a deepness to the swells, an unfathomable expanse that extended not just outward, but downward. "I see eternity," Shallan said. "Spoken like an artist," Yasna said. "This ship sails across depths we cannot know. Beneath these waves is a bustling, frantic, unseen world." Yasna leaned forward, gripping the rail with one hand unclothed and the other veiled within the safe hand sleeve. She looked outward, not at the depths, and not at the land distantly peeking over both the northern and southern horizons. She looked toward the east, toward the storms. "There is an entire world, Shallan," Yasna said, "of which our minds skim but the surface. A world of deep, profound thought. A world created by deep, profound thoughts. When you see Shadesmar, you enter those depths. It is an alien place to us in some ways, but at the same time we formed it. With some help." "We did what? What are Spren?" Yasna asked. The question caught Shallan off guard, but by now she was accustomed to challenging questions from Yasna. She took time to think and consider her answer. "Nobody knows what Spren are," Shallan said. "Though many philosophers have different opinions on..." "No," Yasna said. "What are they?" Shallan looked up at a pair of wind Spren spinning through the air above. They looked like tiny ribbons of light, glowing softly, dancing around one another. "They're living ideas." Yasna spun on her. "What?" Shallan said, jumping. "Am I wrong?" "No," Yasna said. "You're right." The woman narrowed her eyes. "By my best guess, Spren are elements of the cognitive realm that have leaked into the physical world. They're concepts that have gained a fragment of sentience, perhaps because of human intervention. Think of a man who gets angry often. Think of how his friends and family might start referring to that anger as a beast, as a thing that possesses him, as something external to him. Humans personify. We speak of the wind as if it has a will of its own. Spren are those ideas. The ideas of collective human experience somehow come alive. Shadesmar is where that first happens, and it is their place. Though we created it, they shaped it. They live there, they rule there, within their own cities."
"Cities?"
"Yes," Yasna said, looking back out over the ocean. She seemed troubled. "Spren are wild in their variety. Some are as clever as humans and create cities. Others are like fish and simply swim in the currents.
Shallan nodded. Though in truth she was having trouble grasping any of this, she didn't want Jasnah to stop talking. This was the sort of knowledge that Shallan needed, the kind of thing she craved.
Does this have to do with what you discovered? About the Parshmen? The Void Bringers?
I haven't been able to determine that yet. The Spren are not always forthcoming. In some cases, they do not know. In others, they do not trust me because of our ancient betrayal.
Shallan frowned, looking to her teacher.
Betrayal? They tell me of it, Jasnah said. But they won't say what it was. We broke an oath, and in so doing offended them greatly. I think some of them may have died. Though how a concept can die, I do not know.
Jasnah turned to Shallan with a solemn expression.
I realize this is overwhelming. You will have to learn this, all of it, if you are to help me.
Are you still willing? Do I have a choice?
A smile tugged at the edges of Jasnah's lips.
I doubt it.
Your soul cast on your own, without the aid of a Fabriel.
You are like me.
Shallan stared out across the waters.
Like Jasnah? What did it mean? What?
She froze, blinking. For a moment she thought she'd seen the same pattern as before, the one that had made the ridges on her sheet of paper. This time it had been in the water, impossibly formed on the surface of a wave.
Brightness, she said, resting her fingers on Jasnah's arm.
I thought I saw something in the water just now. A pattern of sharp lines like a maze.
Show me where.
It was on one of the waves, and we've passed it now. But I think I saw it earlier on one of my pages. Does it mean something?
Most certainly.
I must admit, Shallan, I find the coincidence of our meeting to be startling. Suspiciously so.
Brightness?
They were involved. Jasnah said. They brought you to me. And they are still watching you, it appears. So no, Shallan, you no longer have a choice. The old ways are returning, and I don't see it as a hopeful sign. It's an act of self-preservation. The Spren sense impending danger, and so they return to us. Our attention now must turn to the shattered plains and the relics of Urethiru. It will be a long, long time before you return to your homeland.
Shallan nodded mutely.
This worries you, Jasnah said.
Yes, Brightness. My family.
Shallan felt like a traitor in abandoning her brothers, who had been depending on her for wealth. She'd written to them and explained without many specifics that she'd had to return the stolen soul caster, and was now required to help Jasnah with her work.
Balat's reply had been positive, after a fashion. He said he was glad at least one of them had escaped the fate that was coming to the house. He thought that the rest of them, her three brothers and Balat's betrothed, were doomed.
They might be right. Not only would father's debts crush them, but there was the matter of her father's broken soul caster. The group that had given it to him wanted it back. Unfortunately, Shallan was convinced that Jasnah's quest was of the utmost importance. The Void Bringers would soon return. Indeed, they were not some distant threat from stories. They lived among men, and had for centuries. The gentle, quiet Parshmen who worked as perfect servants and slaves were really destroyers. Stopping the catastrophe of the return of the Voidbringers was a greater duty than even protecting her brothers. It was still painful to admit that.
Jasnah studied her.
With regard to your family, Shallan, I have taken some action.
Action? Shallan said, taking the taller woman's arm.
You've helped my brothers?
After a fashion, Jasnah said. Wealth would not truly solve this problem, I suspect. though I have arranged for a small gift to be sent. From what you've said, your family's problems really stem from two issues. First, the ghost bloods desire their soul caster, which you have broken, to be returned. Second, your house is without allies and deeply in debt. Yasna proffered a sheet of paper. This, she continued, is from a conversation I had with my mother via spanreed this morning. Shallan traced it with her eyes, noting Yasna's explanation of the broken soul caster and her request for help. This happens more often than you'd think, Navani had replied. The failing likely has to do with the alignment of the gem housings. Bring me the device, and we shall see. My mother, Yasna said, is a renowned artifabrian. I suspect she can make yours function again. We can send it to your brothers, who can return it to its owners.
You'd let me do that? Shallan asked.
During their day's sailing, Shallan had cautiously pried for more information about the sect, hoping to understand her father and his motives. Yasna claimed to know very little of them beyond the fact that they wanted her research and were willing to kill for it. I don't particularly want them having access to such a valuable device, Yasna said. But I don't have time to protect your family right now directly. This is a workable solution, assuming your brothers can stall a while longer. Have them tell the truth if they must, that you, knowing I was a scholar, came to me and asked me to fix the soul caster. Perhaps that will sate them for now.
Thank you, Brightness.
Storms. If she'd just gone to Yasna in the first place, after being accepted as her ward, how much easier would it have been? Shallan looked down at the paper, noticing that the conversation continued.
As for the other matter, Navani wrote, I'm very fond of this suggestion. I believe I can persuade the boy to at least consider it, as his most recent affair ended quite abruptly, as is common with him, earlier in the week.
What is the second part? Shallan asked, looking up from the paper.
Sating the ghost bloods alone will not save your house, Yasna said. Your debts are too great, particularly considering your father's actions in alienating so many. I have therefore arranged a powerful alliance for your house.
Alliance? How?
Yasna took a deep breath. She seemed reluctant to explain.
I have taken the initial steps in arranging for you to be betrothed to one of my cousins, son of my uncle Dalinar Colin. The boy's name is Adolin. He's handsome and well acquainted with amiable discourse.
Betrothed? Shallan said. You've promised him my hand?
I have started the process, Yasna said, speaking with uncharacteristic anxiety. Though at times he lacks foresight, Adolin has a good heart, as good as that of his father, who may be the best man I have ever known. He is considered Alethkar's most eligible son, and my mother has long wanted him wed.
Betrothed?
Shallan repeated.
Yes, is that distressing?
It's wonderful!
Shallan exclaimed, grabbing Yasna's arm more tightly.
So easy! If I'm married to someone so powerful, storms! Nobody would dare touch us in Yakaved. It would solve many of our problems. Brightness, Yasna, you're a genius!
Yasna relaxed visibly.
Yes, well, it did seem a workable solution. I had wondered, however, if you'd be offended.
Why on the winds would I be offended?
Because of the restriction of freedom implicit in a marriage, Yasna said. And if not that, because the offer was made without consulting you. I had to see if the possibility was even open first. It has proceeded further than I'd expected, as my mother has seized on the idea. Navani has a tendency toward the overwhelming.
Shallan had trouble imagining anyone overwhelming Yasna.
Storm, Father. You're worried I'd be offended? Brightness, I spent my entire life locked in my father's manor. I grew up assuming he'd pick my husband. But you're free of your father now.
Yes, and I was so perfectly wise in my own pursuit of relationships, Shallan said. The first man I chose was not only an ardent, but secretly an assassin.
It doesn't bother you at all, Yasna said. The idea of being beholden to another, particularly a man?
It's not like I'm being sold into slavery, Shallan said with a laugh.
No, I suppose not.
Yasna shook herself, her poise returning.
Well, I will let Navani know you are amenable to the engagement, and we should have a causal in place within the day.
A causal? A conditional betrothal, in Vorin terminology. She would be, for all intents and purposes, engaged, but would have no legal footing until an official betrothal was signed and verified by the Ardents.
The boy's father has said he will not force Adolin into anything, Yasna explained. Though the boy is recently single, as he has managed to offend yet another young lady. Regardless, Dalinar would rather you two meet before anything more binding is agreed upon. There have been shifts in the political climate of the Shattered Plains, a great loss to my uncle's army, another reason for us to hasten to the plains.
Adolin Colin, Shallan said, listening with half an ear. A duelist, a fantastic one, and even a shard-bearer.
Ah, so you were paying attention to your readings about my father and family.
I was, but I knew about your family before that. The Alethia, the center of society. Even girls from rural houses know the names of the Alethi princes.
And she'd be lying if she denied youthful daydreams of meeting one.
But Brightness, are you certain this match will be wise? I mean, I'm hardly the most important of individuals.
Well, yes. The daughter of another high prince might have been preferable for Adolin. However, it seems that he has managed to offend each and every one of the eligible women of that rank. The boy is, shall we say, somewhat over-eager about relationships. Nothing you can't work through, I'm sure.
Stormfather, Shallan said, feeling her legs go weak. He's heir to a princedom. He's in line to the throne of Alethkar itself.
Third in line, Yasna said. Behind my brother's infant son, and Dalinar, my uncle.
Brightness, I have to ask, why Adolin? Why not the younger son? I have nothing to offer Adolin, or the house.
On the contrary, Yasna said, if you are what I think you are, then you will be able to offer him something nobody else can, something more important than riches.
What is it you think that I am? Shallan whispered, meeting the older woman's eyes, finally asking the question that she hadn't dared.
Right now, you are but a promise, Yasna said. A chrysalis with the potential for grandeur inside. When once humans and Spren bonded, the results were women who danced in the skies, and men who could destroy the stones with a touch.
The lost radiance. Traitors to mankind.
She couldn't absorb it all. The betrothal, Shadesmar and the Spren, and this, her mysterious destiny. She'd known, but speaking it. She sank down, heedless of getting her dress wet on the deck, and sat with her back against the bulwark. Yasna allowed her to compose herself before amazingly sitting down herself. She did so with far more poise, tucking her dress underneath her legs as she sat sideways. They both drew looks from the sailors.
They're going to chew me to pieces, Shallan said. The Alethi court. It's the most ferocious in the world.
Yasna snorted. It's more bluster than storm, Shallan. I will train you.
I'll never be like you, Brightness. You have power, authority, wealth. Just look how the sailors respond to you.
Am I specifically using said power, authority, or wealth right now?
You paid for this trip.
Did you not pay for several trips on this ship? Yasna asked. They did not treat you the same as they do me?
No.
Oh, they are fond of me. But I don't have your weight, Yasna.
I will assume that did not have implications toward my girth, Yasna said with a hint of a smile.
I understand your argument, Shallan.
It is, however, dead wrong.
Shallan turned to her. Yasna sat upon the deck of the ship as if it were a throne, back straight, head up, commanding. Shallan sat with her legs against her chest, arms around them below the knees. Even the ways they sat were different. She was nothing like this woman.
There is a secret you must learn, child, Yasna said. A secret that is even more important than those relating to Shadesmar and Spren. Power is an illusion of perception.
Shallan frowned.
Don't mistake me, Yasna continued. Some kinds of power are real. Power to command armies, power to soul cast. These come into play far less often than you would think. On an individual basis in most interactions, this thing we call power, authority, exists only as it is perceived.
You say I have wealth. This is true, but you have also seen that I do not often use it.
You say I have authority as the sister of a king.
I do. And yet the men of this ship would treat me exactly the same way if I were a beggar who had convinced them I was the sister to a king. In that case, my authority is not a real thing. It is mere vapors, an illusion. I can create that illusion for them, as can you.
I'm not convinced, Brightness.
I know. If you were, you would be doing it already.
Yasna stood up, brushing off her skirt.
You will tell me if you see that pattern, the one that appeared on the waves, again?
Yes, Brightness, Shallan said. Distracted.
Then take the rest of the day for your art. I need to consider how to best teach you of Shadesmar.
The older woman retreated, nodding at the bows of sailors as she passed and went back down below decks.
Shallan rose, then turned and grabbed the railing, one hand to either side of the bowsprit. The ocean spread before her, rippling waves, a scent of cold freshness, rhythmic crashing as the sloop pushed through the waves.
Yasna's words fought in her mind, like sky eels, with only one rat between them.
Spren with cities?
Shadesmar, a realm that was here but unseen?
Shallan, suddenly betrothed to the single most important bachelor in the world?
She left the bow, walking along the side of the ship, free hand trailing on the railing.
How did the sailors regard her?
They smiled. They waved. They liked her.
Yalb, who hung lazily from the rigging nearby, called to her, telling her that in the next port there was a statue she had to go visit.
It's this giant foot, young miss. Just a foot. Never finished the blustering statue.
She smiled to him and continued.
Did she want them to look at her as they looked at Yasna? Always afraid? Always worried that they might do something wrong? Was that power?
When I first sailed from Vaidenar, she thought, reaching the place where her box had been tied, the captain kept urging me to go home. He saw my mission as a fool's errand.
Tozbek had always acted as if he were doing her a favor in conveying her after Yasna. Should she have had to spend that entire time feeling as if she'd imposed upon him and his crew by hiring them?
Yes, he had offered a discount to her because of her father's business with him in the past, but she'd still been employing him.
The way he'd treated her was probably a thing of Thalen merchants. If a captain could make you feel like you were imposing on him, you'd pay better. She liked the man, but their relationship left something to be desired.
Yasna would never have stood for being treated in such a way.
That Santhid still swam alongside.
It was like a tiny mobile island, its back overgrown with seaweed, small crystals jutting up from the shell. Shallan turned and walked toward the stern, where Captain Tosbeck spoke with one of his mates, pointing at a map covered with glyphs. He nodded to her as she approached.
"Just a warning, young miss," he said. "The ports will soon grow less accommodating. We'll be leaving Longbrow's Straits, curving around the eastern edge of the continent, toward New Natanan. There's nothing of worth between here and the shallow crypts, and even that's not much of a sight. I wouldn't send my own brother ashore there without guards, and he's killed 17 men with his bare hands, he has."
"I understand, Captain," Shallan said, "and thank you. I've revised my earlier decision. I need you to halt the ship and let me inspect the specimen swimming beside us."
He sighed, reaching up and running his fingers along one of his stiff, spiked eyebrows, much as other men might play with their mustaches.
"Brightness, that's not advisable. Storm, father. If I dropped you in the ocean..."
"Then I would be wet," Shallan said. "It is a state I've experienced one or two times in my life."
"No, I simply cannot allow it. Like I said, we'll take you to see some shells in..."
"Cannot allow it?" Shallan interrupted. She regarded him with what she hoped was a look of puzzlement, hoping he didn't see how tightly she squeezed her hands closed at her sides. Storms, but she hated confrontation. "I wasn't aware I had made a request you had the power to allow or disallow, Captain. Stop the ship. Lower me down. That is your order." She tried to say it as forcefully as Jasna would. The woman could make it seem easier to resist a full high storm than to disagree with her. Tosbeck worked his mouth for a moment, no sound coming out, as if his body were trying to continue his earlier objection, but his mind had been delayed.
"It is my ship," he finally said.
"Nothing will be done to your ship," Shallan said. "Let's be quick about it, Captain. I do not wish to overly delay our arrival in port tonight." She left him, walking back to her box, heart thumping, hands trembling. She sat down, partially to calm herself. Tosbeck, sounding profoundly annoyed, began calling out orders. The sails were lowered. The ship slowed. Shallan breathed out, feeling a fool. And yet, what Jasna said worked. The way Shallan acted created something in the eyes of Tosbeck. An illusion? Like the Spren themselves, perhaps? Fragments of human expectation given life? The Santhid slowed with them. Shallan rose, nervous, as sailors approached with rope. They reluctantly tied a loop at the bottom she could put her foot in, then explained that she should hold tightly to the rope as she was lowered. They tied a second, smaller rope securely around her waist, the means by which to haul her, wet and humiliated, back onto the deck, an inevitability in their eyes. She took off her shoes, then climbed up over the railing as instructed. Had it been this windy before? She had a moment of vertigo, standing there with socked toes gripping a tiny rim, dress fluttering in the coursing winds. A windspren zipped up to her, then formed into the shape of a face with clouds behind it. Storms. The thing had better not interfere. Was it human imagination that had given windspren their mischievous spark? She stepped unsteadily into the rope loop as the sailors lowered it down beside her feet. Then Yalb handed her the mask he'd told her of. Jasna appeared from below decks, looking about in confusion. She saw Shallan standing off the side of the ship, and then cocked an eyebrow. Shallan shrugged, then gestured to the men to lower her. She refused to let herself feel silly as she inched toward the waters and the reclusive animal bobbing in the waves. The men stopped her a foot or two above the water, and she put on the mask,
held by straps, covering most of her face, including the nose.
"Lower!" she shouted up at them.
She thought she could feel their reluctance in the lethargic way the rope descended. Her foot hit the water and a biting cold shot up her leg. "Storm, Father." But she didn't have them stop. She let them lower her farther until her legs were submerged in the frigid water. Her skirt ballooned out in a most annoying way, and she actually had to step on the end of it, inside the loop, to prevent it from rising up about her waist and floating on the water's surface as she submerged. She wrestled with the fabric for a moment, glad the men above couldn't see her blushing. Once it got wetter, though, it was easier to manage. She finally was able to squat, still holding tightly to the rope, and go down into the water up to her waist. Then she ducked her head under the water. Light streamed down from the surface in shimmering, radiant columns. There was life here, furious, amazing life. Tiny fish zipped this way and that, picking at the underside of the shell that shaded a majestic creature. Gnarled like an ancient tree with rippled and folded skin, the true form of the Santhid was a beast with long, drooping blue tendrils, like those of a jellyfish, only far thicker. Those disappeared down into the depths, trailing behind the beast at a slant. The beast itself was a knotted gray-blue mass underneath the shell. Its ancient-looking folds surrounded one large eye on her side, presumably would be its twin on the other. It seemed ponderous yet majestic, with mighty fins moving like oarsmen. A group of strange spren shaped like arrows moved through the water here around the beast. Schools of fish darted about. Though the depths seemed empty, the area just around the Santhid teemed with life, as did the area under the ship. Tiny fish picked at the bottom of the vessel. They'd move between the Santhid and the ship, sometimes alone, sometimes in waves. Was this why the creature swam up beside a vessel? Something to do with the fish and their relationship to it? She looked upon the creature, and its eye, as big as her head, rolled toward her, focusing, seeing her. In that moment, Shallan couldn't feel the cold. She couldn't feel embarrassed. She was looking into a world that, so far as she knew, no scholar had ever visited. She blinked her eyes, taking a memory of the creature, collecting it for later sketching.